got some water. I know a number of people have gone out to the restroom, so I just wanted to let you know, every month, and maybe coming soon, twice a month, we send out an email to anybody who's on the list for the Buddha and Bill W. If you would like to be on that email, like to receive it, then if you go to our website and just click on Addiction and Recovery, there is a place where you can sign up. And you won't be barraged with all sorts of emails. It'll just be once or twice a month. But it's a nice way for Nancy and I to stay in touch with all of you over the course of a month. Okay? That'd be nice. Rebecca, thank you so much. You know, one of the meanings of generosity, a lot of times in our culture when we think of generosity, we think of like money. And it's so much more than money. Yeah, it can include money, but particularly here at New York Insight and certainly in the Buddha and Bill W., everything is generosity, you know, the way we give our services. And it's really so beautiful. And I love that saying, you've got to give it away in order to keep it. And wouldn't it be nice if we could bring that into other areas of our life and not just into the 12 steps? There's that sense of that deep interconnection. And most of the people who do anything at New York Insight, I mean, most of New York Insight is run by volunteers. And so, again, Rebecca, thank you. And Miriam is sitting right back there, raising her hand. So tonight, as I said before, we're going to continue exploring aspects of the different paths that lead towards happiness. And so this is not just the Buddha's teachings, but certainly Bill W.'s. And I think in some way we all want to be happy. But real happiness can be a little scary, because it can mean letting go of a lot of other things. And actually, we just often get in our own way. Even though we can blame other things, we get in our own way. And over the past few months, we've been reflecting on what it takes to get out of our way, you know, and what are the aspects of our behaviors, our thoughts, and our words that keep tripping us up. And a lot of times we're not even aware. We blame it on somebody else, right? They shouldn't have. Last month, Lorna Kelly, as I said, was here, and she spoke on step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And this admitting is what's so important, but the exact nature. I remember once somebody called and asked me a long, long time ago if they could do a 5th step with me. And I said, okay, fine. And she came in, she took out a piece of paper, which is about the size of a Post-it. And she said, yeah, I get angry. Oh, it feels so good to get that off my chest. I said, well, you can put it back on your chest, the Post-it, and go out and explore a little more. So this is deep work that we do. This is deep work that we do. So once we do the 5th step, then what do? After the 4th and 5th step, you know, and even getting sober, abstinent, clean from whatever the behavior, substance, whatever it is, sometimes a few things do change spontaneously just from not being clogged up in our brains, right? But most of the time, it takes a deeper gut knowing to get to that release. We cannot just press the delete button. You know, I love the thing on the iPhones. I don't love the iPhone. I find it so hard to work. But anyway, I love when you just take something off into the trash. And wouldn't it be nice if we could just, oh, I don't like that pattern, pat trash. But it doesn't work that way. Philip Moffat who, by the way, he's awesome, is going to be here June 16th, 9:45 to 5. How about this? From emotional chaos to clarity. And he's a very down-to-earth person. He's a wonderful teacher out on the West Coast. I think he once was the editor-in-chief of Esquire. Was that what it was? Yeah. So he's had one foot in this crazy economic world, and he's a brilliant teacher. So if you're interested, he's doing the power of mindfulness and intention to support well-being. And a lot of what we're going to be talking here tonight, and there's a little flyer out there as well, a lot of what we're going to be talking about tonight is the importance of intention and well-being, and to bring that into our practice. So here's something that he said, and this wasn't related to 12 steps, it's just related to changing. It is necessary to start your inner journey with humility. You must acknowledge the fact that you do not know how much you're going to be able to achieve, or even how well you understand the task at hand. If you already knew how to live more harmoniously, you would do so. But you don't. So you open to the possibility of finding freedom from suffering while still in a state of ignorance. I love that. There's just so much possibility in that. You are at your beginning. You are starting to work with what you do not know. I know it was like that for me when I first came into program, 37, 38 years ago. I had no idea what I was getting into. I walked in, and possibility held me. Right? So his words are a beautiful doorway to step 6 and 7. So here's an orientation of how to look at these steps a little more aligned with Buddhist thinking or Buddhist wording, okay? And we can look at the process this way. We become ready to set the intention to see how our destructive habitual patterns hurt others and ourselves. So we're getting willing to see how that works. And then with this attitude, and this is so important, when we're willing to see, we start to really understand the cause and effect of our words, our actions, and our thoughts. So often we don't get that some of the pain that's coming to us from other people is the effect of something we have done to them. And this cause and effect is one of the primary teachings of the Buddha. Once we do this, then we also have the willingness to move towards letting go. To move towards, not just boom, let go, but to move towards. And then we would go to step 7 with our own humble resolve. And this humble resolve doesn't, I gotta do it, I gotta get it right. That's not what that means. It's, I wanna move in that direction. It's important. So with our own humble resolve and with the assistance of others, and those of us who are in 12-step programs know how important it is, the assistance of others. And the Buddha said there is nothing more valuable than like-minded friends. And so when we have all this, unskillful aspects start to be transformed. But here's what's so important. It's not just letting go of the unskillful, but positive habits are cultivated. That's also really important. Not just letting go, but cultivating new ideas, new ways that come from kindness and caring and compassion and morality. Then things really blossom. So these two steps actually open to a major shift in how we see things. Major shift in how we see things. Including a willingness to see deeply into things that don't make us feel comfortable. And that's a real gift. And this is where I find for myself, and I think for you too, right, the practice learning how to sit with the uncomfortable so I can really see what's there without a... I'm so sorry. Without a storyline. No, you know, it's just me. It's not the trouble with the mic. It's fine. It's whacking. So in one way, you know, we did this in taking our inventory in step four. We started to searching and fearless. That takes courage, right? If you really look at it. But now we're on the actual playing field. This isn't just journaling. This is daily life. And sometimes we don't know the script anymore. So we're seeing something new. It is not enough just to acknowledge, you know, our errors and our unskillful thoughts. And you'll notice I use the word unwholesome and unskillful very often, rather than defects and what have you. And the Buddha talked a lot about living in a... And he doesn't use words like good and bad. You know, there's, especially in our society, the judgment that goes with that. But it's something skillful and wholesome. I really like that. It gives me a little more breathing room. So the next step is, once we do all this, if we really want to be free and we want to be happy and we want to have a good time, not one that boomerangs back on us, then we have to find a way to let go of the behaviors that really get in our way. And some of them are deep. So in order to do it, we need right resolve, but we also need compassion. We need compassion and kindness as we do this. Almost like we can be our own little happy mommy. We can say, you're a good girl, you know, you're doing the best you can do right now. Just keep going. It's okay. You're not bad. Ah, it makes me so sad. I'm a therapist. Nancy is also. When people come in and they tell me when they were little and they did something, they got into their trouble and their mother or father said, God damn, you're a brat. Get out of here, you know. And that can stay with you till you're 90 if you live that long. So we're changing that also. Letting go sounds very nice in theory. Not so easy in actuality. So it's a process, not just a decision. We're making the decision to open to the process. There's a wonderful metaphor for this process of changing. It's a poem. And I believe I've read it here before, but it's just so perfect for steps 6 and 7. Maybe some of you know it. It's called Autobiography in 5 Chapters. Anybody know it? Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? Portia Nelson. Doesn't hurt to hear it again. 1, 1st chapter. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm hopeless. It isn't my fault. Takes forever to find a way out. Chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. It's not my fault. Still, it takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it's there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It's my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down another street. Isn't that great? Step 6 and 7. And actually, it's interesting, it's a wonderful poem. Sogyal Rinpoche, who is an amazing Tibetan Buddhist master, in the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, he actually had that. He actually put it in there. So, fears, worries, negative habits, resentments, all sorts of self-defeating behaviors, we seem to get caught again and again in certain patterns, even when we know they're not good for us. Just seems to happen. Chapter 2. Out of chapter 2. And all too often, but here's the interesting thing, all too often we don't even realize we're getting caught. We don't even realize it's happening, that there's some ongoing, almost automatic way of perceiving and proceeding with our lives. It just seems to be happening. I don't know what's wrong here, you know? One piece of it is, and this is something, you don't have to just be in program, this is across the board. Too often we're acting blindly, thinking only of ourselves, without realizing the implications. I think I've told this once before, I think, but at a time when I was drinking a lot and smoking a lot and doing a lot of things that weren't skillful, I would speak to my mother and I would say, I'm so depressed, I feel like killing myself, I'm so depressed. And then, we didn't have answering machines at that time, but she would call, I would hear the phone ring, and I didn't pick it up. And then when I finally speak to her, she'd say, Sandra, I was so worried, how are you? I was fine, what are you worried about? No taking in what I had done to create such pain in her. And boy, that was an eye-opener when I finally got, oh, how I talk is going to matter. And I think maybe we all have some, maybe lighter, version of that. And see, a lot of this is unconscious. And I think one of the things that happens when we come into program is to become conscious. And it can be scary when we become conscious. I did what? That kind of thing. And here's another thing. If we're lucky, it may not feel lucky at the moment, someone will point out to us what we're doing. Not always in a very sweet, kind way, but they'll point out. And it can feel awful. It can feel like criticism. It can bring up shame. It can feel like you just want to run away. And certainly that's how it's been for me. But I must tell you, it's a great gift to have your eyes opened if you can't do it on your own. Ultimately, it's a gift. And admittedly, sometimes it feels like life is pulling your eyelids open, you know. Ah! Pulling them open so that you can see. I remember, gosh, maybe 3 years ago, so that's fairly recent, two friends at the same time started telling me about a particular pattern I had and how it really hurt them, annoyed them, pissed them off, the whole thing. And I just wanted to dig a hole. And just, they don't like me anymore, you know. And the truth is, thank God they did. Because I was able to make some big shifts, which were wonderful for me and also wonderful for the people who were my friends. So, you know, we get information in many different ways. And to just be grateful for it all. If we look at our habit patterns a little more deeply, we start to see that all or most, if not all, of our protective behaviors are in the service of hanging on to some kind of a sense of self. Now, very often it's a sense of self that we've fabricated, you know, we've made up. But still, we are so attached to this I, me, this is me, this is me, this is who I am. You know, maybe you've said it sometimes, I know I've heard it a lot. I'm just a depressed person, this is who I am. Or, I can't help it if you don't like how I'm acting, this is who I am. What does that mean, this is who I am? And that, who am I, is probably the deepest spiritual question that any of us can ask. What is this I that I'm hanging on to? What is this I? And often, if you've noticed, it's me versus you. It's not an us. Now, when I come into a room like this, I know there's a lot of eyes in here, right? But there's also an us. Also an us. And that us is so powerful, whether it's a question of Sangha, the Buddhist people coming together, going into an AA meeting, or whatever kind of the meeting is. So many times, no matter what has been going on in my life, I go into a room and have a sense of us. I may get back into the I as soon as I leave, but how wonderful. Because, you know, we can't live this life alone. Doesn't work. Doesn't work. So, freeing ourselves from these habitual thoughts and actions is the very purpose of the Buddha's teachings and meditation. And when we work with this, with Buddhist mindfulness, or just mindfulness and meditation, we become willing to look directly at what's going on as it arises in the present, without a whole long storyline. Just seeing what's there. I was on retreat for a couple of weeks, and somewhere around the second day, something the teacher said, I don't know what, well, I do know, but I didn't know at the time, triggered an anxiety like I haven't ever known. I've never known. My whole body was dancing in anxiety. At one point I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I've never had anything like that before. And what was so wonderful is I could just say, ah, anxiety is like this. It's here for some reason. I'll explore. And what could have been a hell realm turned out to be discomfort in the body. And then finally things did open. It was a gift. Something very, very old had gotten triggered. And because I could allow it to be there, something shifted. And it works like that when we allow ourselves to come in to the present of what's going on and not just reacting all over the place. That doesn't mean that we don't take actions, but I'm talking about reactions. And so one way to work with this, for example, you can pick one difficult habit that you have, one that you know of, one difficult one, and start to directly experience it in your daily life. See how it comes up, or when it comes up, or does it come up. And watch what happens when it occurs. It can actually be really interesting. And if you don't get it while it's occurring, you can look at it 10 minutes later, 2 hours later, and go, oh, there it was. Got it. See it? Okay. See, that's part of the process. And this is like seeking a direct experience and welcoming it, even if it's uncomfortable. And they'll be uncomfortable a lot of the times, but through mindful, compassionate awareness. And I keep saying the word compassion because I think that we need that so much in our lives. So entirely ready is not that everything gets lifted, as I've been saying, but we're willing to move forward with patient improvement. Sometimes we think, I can't stay with this, right? I mean, I'm sure we've all had times when we've said, uh-uh. I mean, sometimes I do go to the movies in the afternoon. That's my version of, let me take a break. But sometimes when I take a break, it's like, I'm going to take a little break. I'm going to come back when I feel a little more resourceful in about an hour, 2 hours. So there are a lot of different ways we learn to do this. So the more we start to see that looking at these painful patterns has a real payoff, then, of course, the more likely we'll be willing to do it. So we actually, through this process, we learn to transform negative habits and patterns into positive thoughts. So while this is going down, this is coming up. And that is really important. And it does work that way. So if we're going to do more with this, there are some helpful questions to ask. And We'll work with them a little later when we break into groups. So here are some questions. What are some triggers that lead me to acting in a way that's unskillful? Well, we all have our version of the triggers. With this, we go closer to the roots. See, just cutting something off up here might be okay in the moment, but the more we can get down there and uproot it, the better it will be. So what are the triggers that lead me to act in a way unskillful? But here's a question I like. why is it so hard to be ready to part with certain defects? No, you can't have that. Why is it so hard? Is there fear of being less interesting? Is there fear of being more vulnerable? Is there fear of being powerless? Now, these are big questions to ask. So what particular patterns do you especially want to hold on to, even though they seem to get you into trouble? So you start to see they get you into trouble, but well, maybe next year. Not now. What do each of these hindrances or difficulties, what do they do for me? Because we wouldn't hang on to something if we didn't think we were getting something from it, right? That's a big one. What is it doing for me? But then you got to ask, well, what is it doing to me? To look at both sides. So it's really like doing research, right? We're going into the University of Freedom. And you want to get your bachelor's or PhD. And then how have some of these old tools and ways of being, of self-protecting, how have they outlived their usefulness? Sometimes we keep doing something even though we really don't need to do it anymore, but we're literally just doing it out of habit. And then you realize, well, I don't need to do that. Those are wonderful. Those they kind of just drop away. So, and it's helpful if we can see change in the bigger picture, that everything, including you and me, everything is impermanent. Everything is impermanent. Change is happening whether we like it or not. And you know what? We know that intellectually, but somehow there's something in here that's saying, But when you really get that, then things are not that, you don't try to hold on as ferociously. Right? So the word humbly is so significant. It's a letting go of our egos, that self-pride. There's nothing wrong with being proud of something that you do and you do well. It's that pride that, I gotta be the best, and look what I did, I'm great. You know, that makes me okay. That gets in the way. It's a willingness to be vulnerable. Vulnerability doesn't sound like what we would ordinarily want, because when you're vulnerable, you're more likely to feel hurt. And yet after a while, being vulnerable feels good because it's authentic. This is just what it is right now. And once you get okay with being vulnerable in certain areas, then you're not that vulnerable. You're not that vulnerable to being hurt. You're just softer, open. Step 7 says, the chief activator of our defects is self-centered fear. And as I said a little earlier, this is the theme of the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha's first teaching. Life has suffering, there's a cause, and the cause of suffering is grasping, needing things to be a certain way. We're not always able to keep what we have. We can't get rid of what we don't want. We can't get more of what we do want. And add to that sickness, old age, and death. You know, there's a lot of things we have to learn to be with. And so all of this stuff can be just permeated by fear. And this leads to behavior trying to push away how life works. And ultimately it doesn't work. And all of us want to be happy. And the thing is, we look for happiness in all the wrong places. So we don't get happy. We get happy for a moment. And then the next moment something happened. So being humble is not about self-depreciation. Sometimes people confuse humility with humiliation, and they are totally different. Here are some qualities of being humble. See if you identify with any. Behave without arrogance, self-conceit, and other egoist tendencies such as jealousy and an impulse to show off. Impulse to show off was something I had to work with. Respect others. and show a genuine human interest in them without a desire to please or to impress. I think that's profound, right? I'm getting to the end, by the way. Come up with an objective and honest understanding of our own strengths and weaknesses. Really see, where am I strong? Where am I weak? Humble doesn't mean I got to push away everything that I like about myself, no. And a realization that we are all far from perfect and have a lot more to learn, a lot more to accomplish. It's all there. And then there's another step that we don't often take into account, and it's one that the Buddha also talked about, knowing. Know that you know if a particular pattern has been uprooted. Know that you've done something there. Wow, I don't do that anymore. That's cool. But to know that. And so it involves mindfully integrating what you've seen, what you've learned, and how you put all this into your daily life. So we're doing that acknowledging. And I'll tell you, without this step of acknowledging what you've done, what you've accomplished, what you've shifted, it's very easy to fall back into the old habits. But this is not to say, wow, am I fantastic, I let go of this habit. That's the habit. Right? But really think, wow, did some good work. Thank you. So as we continue our journey through step 6, 7, and then 6 and 7, then move on, what we're doing is we're turning our attention more and more to the possibility of a true happiness without grasping. So I'll end with a quote by Rilke. I think this is so beautiful. I might say it twice. It's short. I want to unfold. Don't want to stay folded anywhere. Because where I am folded, there I am alive. I want to unfold. I don't want to stay folded anywhere. Because where I am folded, there I am alive. That's what we're all doing here tonight, right? We're unfolding. So I thank you, and now Nancy is going. Do you want to change seats with me again?
Sure.
Change. Great.
Okay. So, always. Sandra, thank you so very much. I'll just say a few words about the teaching tonight from my own perspective as a person in recovery. First of all, I loved the poem about falling in the hole. Yeah. And I guess for me, being in recovery for almost 2 decades and being in the practice now for about 15 years, I feel immensely blessed because my self-centered alcoholism and self-isolation would always lead me back to falling in the hole and staying in the hole for a really long time and not having a clue how to get out. And because I live now in fellowship and in Sangha, you know, having these beautiful practices both in AA and also through New York Insight, the meditation community, I have an opportunity to walk down a different street. But I don't always walk down a different street. I still might fall in the hole. I might walk around the hole. So I guess what I've learned is that those times when I do still fall in the hole, I have a whole lot more compassion when there only used to be self-hatred. And I think that is the blessing of the fellowship and the teachings of Bill W. and the teachings of the Buddha. So I love the talk. It's very, very helpful. And I think the fact that we're all here tonight, we're very blessed to be here, to be exposed to these really tremendous gifts that we're able to experience at this particular moment. And I just wanted to, you know, just thank everybody for showing up. Okay.
Thank you. I think this was recorded, yes?
Yes.
Yay. So at some point, it will be on dharmaseed.org, and in an email, we're having some trouble with recordings, and so in one of the emails, there'll be instructions about how to access it. So hopefully more and more of the talks will be recorded. It's one thing to listen to a talk, it's another thing to read a book or whatever, but when you hear yourself speak, that's one of the best teachers. So I think what we can do tonight is break into groups of three, and each person can talk for about 5 minutes, just about what, you know, some of the questions I asked. Is there a particular pattern, or how does it get you into trouble, or what would you like to let go of? Or what habit have you moved past, and what's that like? You know, anything that comes up around these. The beautiful part of this is it is a practice also in deep listening. Very often we don't really listen to other people even though we're going like this. A lot of times, maybe you relate to that, I don't know. But a lot of times we're thinking about what we're going to say and how we agree or don't agree with somebody. But in this case, it's just about hearing. It's not about you, it's about the other person. And stay in your body and be aware. And it is such a, like, for me, one of the greatest gifts that I can have is if somebody just listens to me and doesn't fix me and doesn't one-up me, you know, right? So if we break up into groups of three, once we do that, we'll hit the gong to start, and then we'll strike a gong when the 5 minutes is over. All right, okay? Anybody have any questions? And it's really good if you don't. So we have about, not much time, we have about 5 minutes, 7 minutes, something like that. Would anybody like to share what this experience was like for them? Did anything open up for you? Did something close down for you? Please.
It's been a wonderful experience for me, and I'm so glad that I came. Even though I have...
You have to do it like an ice cream cone.
Even though I've been in recovery for about 27 years, I haven't been going to meetings regularly for a long time, and I've just been falling into a hole, definitely. And something has been stirring in me that I needed to reach out and try some different things for my life and try to get help for myself with the things that I'm grappling with. And I'm a mental health professional and have had years of therapy, but it seems that Buddhism has some philosophy and some teachings that I feel will be very helpful to me. And will help me to go in a different direction from what I've been before, and will maybe help me to get myself out of the hole that I seem to be in. So I feel very excited tonight.
Oh, wonderful.
And I feel I won't be even looking out the window, or I will be looking out the window on the train all the way home, and just sort of lost in sort of a dream of possibilities and hope for the future.
So you'll be looking into a different window.
Great.
Correct.
And if you're interested more in the Buddhist teachings, you can check our website. There are different courses coming up that you might find helpful, particularly Philip Muffet. Okay. There's another, there was another hand somewhere. Ah, right there, yeah. Thank you. Here comes the cone.
Hi, Marilyn, I'm an alcoholic. Hi, and thank you so much. Thank you, both of you. And I really appreciate the teaching. And the thing I know is about step six is that there's about this much in the big book, you know? Yeah. And it's beyond a lifetime of work. But just, and just that I've been noticing in the past week or two, especially noticing more how much I cause suffering, my own suffering. And because of your teaching, and I've been doing a lot of classes here recently in my own practice, just a lot more committed to my own practice and not shaming or blaming myself, but saying, well, there it is again, suffering. And that's huge. Yeah. That, because the biggest defect of character is, you know, staying in the suffering, well, not knowing, but just staying in it and burying myself in it. So I just feel like, as uncomfortable as this is, it's also amazing. So thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn. You know, you said something really important. You said a lot that was important. In the big book, step six and seven is boom, 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 and then you go on to the heavy-duty stuff making. And yet, this is such pivotal steps. And you think, oh, they only mentioned it a little bit, so I'll just go on to something else. Yeah, thank you, Marilyn. Anybody else? Be careful if you put your hand up. Oh, right over here. Thank you. And this will be the last one.
Hi, I'm Alexandra. Hi, and this was the both parts, the three parts. I felt that the teaching was very poignant. It was painful. And I appreciated the opportunity to sort of rest with that and then in the listening and speaking part. And the opportunity to listen and to observe how I listen and how I don't.
Oh, really?
And not to, but what surprised me was that I was able to just notice it and then I guess the teaching is that just noticing it is enough for now. So thank you.
Thank you, Alexander. I wanted to ask a quick question to those of you who are still here. I notice when I say let's break up into dyads, people seem to leave. Those, who here would prefer just a general, I'm not saying I'll do it, but I'm just...
You're bad.
Yeah, I'm bad. How many people here would prefer, after a talk and everything, just a general discussion? How many people here like the dyads trial?
Wow. But these are all the folks that stayed.
But these are
Come on, girl.
So Miriam, next month you lock the door. But actually, we are very interested in feedback at any times. So if there are things you would like us to know or you'd like to relay to us, you can send an email to New York Insight and it will come to us, okay? So because how you're experiencing all of this is also important to us. Even though I may have sounded like a dictator tonight, I'm not really.
Okay.
There's a beautiful practice. Yes? Oh. Okay, thank you, Miriam. So right around in the back there, there's a black box. You can put anything in, and if you put our name on it or Buddha and Bill W, then we'll get it. Yeah? Yes, on the second Monday of every month, there is a People of Color sitting, which is here, and it's a wonderful, vibrant sitting. So one of the beautiful practices in this tradition is the practice of loving kindness. Maybe some of you have heard that the Dalai Lama, he's so brilliant and kind and lovely and beautiful, but they were having a whole big thing about religion and what have you, and he said, look, if I have to just get it down to a few words, my religion is kindness. And it's not a throwaway word, and so there's a beautiful meditation for cultivating loving kindness, and there isn't much more time tonight, but Nancy will give us a taste. Okay? Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so please come back into a sitting position. I think as people in recovery, before I start this meditation, I just want to remind everybody, the first part of it is about kindness towards ourselves. So, so we start this loving kindness meditation with heart opening toward our very own being. The cultivation of thoughts of loving kindness toward ourselves. Sometimes it's helpful doing this meditation to place your hand on your heart because it gives that tactile connection to the body, to the heart. And I've heard it said that even if there are few feelings of loving kindness toward your very own being, you can simply be aware. My heart is not so open, and that is perfectly all right in this practice. Awareness of the quality of your heart and feelings of loving kindness or the lack thereof for yourself. But we cultivate and develop words of loving kindness toward our very own being. So I'm going to say some phrases, and you can say them silently to yourself. And these are phrases that you can use at any time of the day. May I be happy. May I live in peace. May I be free from inner and outer harm. And the next step we take in this practice is to send thoughts of loving kindness to each and every person in the room here tonight, opening the circle of loving kindness, including everyone who started the sit tonight and had to leave. May you be happy. May you live in peace. May you be free from inner and outer harm. And then taking this cultivation another step further to all beings everywhere without exception. All beings alive at this very moment on the planet are worthy and deserving of loving kindness. May all beings be happy. May all beings live in peace, and may all beings everywhere be free from inner and outer harm. And may the merit of our practice here tonight be for the benefit of all beings everywhere without exception.
Thank you for your presence. It would be very helpful if you would stack the chairs in the back, no more than, yeah? Oh, it would be helpful if you leave the chairs. Okay. And hon, do you want the cushions? Do you want us to leave the cushions as well? Okay. And whatever donation you make, believe me, will be very appreciated by New York Insight. Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.